out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 31st of December, 2018. It's New Year's Eve, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we've got a particularly entertaining news story for you today for the last Daily Nationalist of the year. This concerns our old favourites, the Negroes, who do quite often feature in the Daily Nationalist, a lot of the time purely for entertainment purposes, but obviously also for their extreme violence. This one is for their entertainment purposes, I guess. A soldier from Africa is suing the Ministry of Defence for £150,000, claiming that they failed to protect him from the cold weather conditions. Michael Asimaya from Ghana brought the negligence claim after allegedly suffering a cold-related condition during exercises on Salisbury Plain in March 2016. According to his lawyers, the 36-year-old suffered pain and numbness in his feet and hands after he was exposed to 18 hours of cold and windy conditions during Exercise Scorpion. So the guy basically caught a cold and is now suing the British government for this. And he actually expected to be evacuated from the exercises because it was cold. Mr. Asimaya told the High Court his superiors had neglected to warn him to bring warm kit such as gloves, socks and boots ahead of the exercise, which he said took place 1 week after he was forced to spend 5 hours listening to lectures in cold weather, while dressed in civilian clothing in Naseby, Northamptonshire. Well, you would have thought that he would have known that the weather was going to be cold because he just spent 5 hours in the cold weather, apparently, but he still didn't think that he needed to actually bring extra clothing or even wearing socks and boots, apparently, ahead of the exercise. So because the army didn't actually tell him that he needed to dress himself and tie his own shoelaces, the army are to blame for him catching a cold. I mean, this really does show you the limited intelligence of the Negro, and that they're not actually, as we've said so many times, they're not capable of thinking of abstract thoughts such as, it may be cold outside, so it may be necessary to bring warm clothes when you go on a 18-hour exercise. But I suspect more than that, there's a desire to just sue the army and make money out of them more than anything else. And he's probably got some Jewish lawyer here who is encouraging him, who says that he can make his millions out of the army to claiming that he's suffered a cold. The British Army used to have a catchphrase, be the best. And they were known as being the best army in the world. And now they're made up of people that want to sue the army because they caught a cold, because the weather was cold. And what's he even doing in the army when he's not even from Britain? He's from Ghana. He should be in the African army, not in the British army. His legal team argues that officers exposed Mr. Asimaya to the uncomfortable conditions despite knowing that Africans are more susceptible to cold-related conditions, according to court papers, which quote a 2009 military study which found soldiers of African origin were 30 times more likely to suffer cold-related injuries than indigenous
Europeans.
Well, that goes completely against this idea that the only difference between us is skin colour. Obviously, there is a biological difference as well. I mean, how can you have somebody in the army that you can only deploy in tropical areas? I mean, this is Europe. This is a European army, a British army on British soil, and it's employing soldiers that it can't actually deploy in Europe because the weather's too cold. And to say that they can sue the army because of this report, which says that they're 30 times more likely to suffer cold-related injuries, that means they shouldn't be employing them. It doesn't mean that they should be evacuating them and only putting them in hot conditions and only sending them off to the tropics to do their exercises. It means that they shouldn't be employing them at all. It means that they are unemployable as soldiers. The ex-soldier also accused the MOD of failing to follow its own advice on evacuating people with non-freezing cold injuries in order to prevent the conditions from worsening, reports the Express, which saw papers relating to the case. Well, I'm sure it's not just Negroes that get cold fingers and go numb when it gets cold outside. Everybody that lives in northern climates of Europe is aware of that feeling. It doesn't mean that they're going to claim money from the government because the weather's cold. Mr. Azimaya, who served with the Adjutant General's Corps until he left the army in October 2016, claims he is still suffering as a result of the MOD's failings. 2 years later, he's claiming he is still suffering from catching a cold. He alleges that ongoing effects from the cold-related conditions have all but killed his dream of becoming a physical education instructor. Well, they're always talking about their dream and how their dreams have been shattered and how they need to just, so long as they have a dream of being something, that's all you need to actually become that. But if he can't handle cold weather, he had no chance of becoming a physical education instructor anyway, because physical education a lot of the time takes place in the cold weather. It's not the army's fault that he's not able to do this, but I would guess that what he's been told is, well, if you've got a problem with the cold weather, then you can't be a physical education instructor. It's not the effect of the cold weather which has caused him to have a condition that has prevented him from being a physical education instructor. It's because he complained about it. It's because he complained about the cold weather. That's what's destroyed him, his dream of becoming a physical education instructor. Army officials who are expected to contest the former soldier's claims maintain that Mr. Azimaya was provided with appropriate clothing for the exercises. So this is just down to common sense. Because the army didn't tell him that he needed to button his coat up, tie his own shoelaces, wear socks with his shoes, because the army didn't tell him that, he thinks the army are to blame because he didn't. What a load of nonsense. How can these lawyers, organisations, agencies, how can they allow this sort of thing to go on? According to a report by Lawyer Monthly last year, compensation claims over non-freezing cold injuries suffered by servicemen have soared in recent years, with the government paying out £1.49 million in 2015 to 2016 under the Armed Forces Compensation Scheme, a 20% rise on the previous year. I wonder if that could have anything to do with a rise in diversity in the army. Commenting on news that claims had soared by an astonishing 1,650% between 2006 and 2016, military claims lawyer Ahmed Al-Nahas said the MOD was failing black servicemen, who he noted suffered 40.1% of recorded cold injuries in the British Army, despite comprising just 0.1% of British forces personnel. Doesn't look like diversity is proving to be much of a strength there for the British Army. And now that these Negroes know that There's this report that says that they're 30 times more likely to suffer cold injuries. All they've got to do is say, oh, I'm starting to feel a little bit numb. I've got a little bit of frostbite. I might have frostbite coming on. And then they can sue the army. That's why 40% of these claims have come from Negroes, because they know that they can get away with it. And it's a non-freezing cold injury as well. So it's not like it's frostbite or anything that can actually be detected, anything that can actually be tested to show that they actually have it. It's just them saying, well, I got a little bit cold. Reporting on the British Army's opening recruitment up to foreign nationals who have never lived in Britain, a move which was announced in November, Breitbart London noted that the rule change was being publicised in African media outlets almost a week ahead of the news appearing in the British press. Against a backdrop of military bosses struggling to hit recruitment targets, MOD chiefs said they hoped scrapping residency requirements for Commonwealth citizens who were previously required to have lived in Britain for 5 years before applying for service would raise the number of foreign personnel enlisted annually from 200 to 1,350. Why on earth would you want to encourage foreigners to join your military? What would happen if the military were deployed in the country that the foreigners came from? They would then be enemy agents within the army. They would be hostile forces within our own army. Besides the fact that they obviously can't handle being in the cold, but that hasn't stopped the British Army from going on a big drive to increase the numbers of Negroes that they've got in there. The armed forces of the United Kingdom have become mired in identity politics, with the British Army bragging that it is winning the race for diversity against the Royal Air Force and the Royal Navy. Well, perhaps the Royal Air Force is a little bit more clever than the British Army and realises that having lots of Negroes as pilots wouldn't be a very good idea. Maybe they are deliberately not trying to win the race for diversity. Well, why are the armed forces in a race for diversity anyway? What possible benefit could that be? A very old proverb is, a house divided against itself will not stand. That goes right back to Jesus Christ, I think, that actually said that. And yet today we're being told that a house against itself is some kind of strength, and that we should strive to have as diverse a military as possible. Multiple long-term targets were set out by the country's defence and military leaders to increase military diversity in 2015, according to military interest news source The Forces Network, with an increase in the proportion of Black, Asian and minority ethnic personnel in the regular forces to 10% by 2020 becoming a key target. So they want 10% of the military to not be able to go out in the cold. As of March this year, annual intake reached a hopeful 9.1%, the report notes. At present, the British Army appears to be leading the pack with 11.1% Black and minority ethnic personnel, compared with the Royal Navy and Royal Marines on 3.8% and the Royal Air Force struggling on 2.3%. I think the Royal Air Force will continue to struggle as well, because you need to have a high IQ to be in the Royal Air Force, and that's not something that Negroes are known to have. No doubt they will start reducing the standards and the intake requirements to actually join the Royal Air Force so that they can get more Negroes involved. And then we will see more mishaps and calamities happening that involve the Royal Air Force, just the same as we see these same sort of mishaps happening in the American military, which has Negroes in some of the highest and most important roles. They've got incompetent Negroes involved. I'm sure when we hear of these attacks that blow up wedding processions and innocent people that they class as collateral damage in Afghanistan and wherever. I'm sure a lot of that is down to them having Negroes involved. If you have diversity involved in anything, it's just going to cause a lowering of standards. You wonder about this bridge that fell down, I think it was in Spain or in Italy, and this bridge collapsed with all these cars on it, great calamity, lots of people killed. And you wonder if there was diversity that was involved in the architecture of this, in the design of it, in the building of it. And I think there were. I think it was a company that was very proud on how multicultural its workforce was. And the bridge falls apart. All you have to do is look at the buildings in India and the amount of times that they collapse and kill all the people inside to understand that you really don't want to have non-whites involved in any building projects. And here we've got people that are suggesting that it's a great idea to have non-whites involved in the Royal Air Force, flying jet planes. I can't think of anything worse other than putting them on a rocket ship, maybe putting them up in a rocket and blasting them into space. That probably has more potential for causing damage than them being in the Air Force. Diversity and inclusion is critical to our success and will give us the operational edge we need, claimed Secretary of State for Defence Gavin Williamson, a Remain supporting MP with a background in pottery sales rather than the armed forces. We are committed to delivering a more inclusive culture and a more diverse workforce at all levels, he added. How is having people that don't speak English, that have a low IQ and that have loyalties to the very people that we are fighting against in Afghanistan, Syria and Iraq, how is it critical to our success and giving us an operational edge to have them involved in our military? Clearly it's not. This is just political correctness being projected into the most ludicrous areas that anybody with any common sense in Britain will be saying, just what the hell is going on? There is concern in some quarters, however, that the current drive for diversity's sake, in terms of not just ethnic background, but also sex and sexual orientation, may see martial ability de-emphasised in the recruitment process. Well, it already has been de-emphasised. There we've got the Secretary of State who's claiming that it's not actually military prowess that we need, but diversity and inclusion. No doubt they will be pushing to include transsexuals in the army as well, never mind the fact that they have to keep injecting themselves with hormones. Just what you're going to need on the battlefield is somebody that needs to be injecting hormones every day and inserting objects into their wound to keep their wound open. Somebody who has an open wound already before they even get to the battlefield. Yes, I'm sure that really is going to give the army the operational edge that they need. Army brass recently defended a new recruitment video targeting British Muslims. Why would you want British Muslims in the army? It's just a fifth column. Army brass recently defended a new recruitment video targeting British Muslims, which showed soldiers stopping a patrol so a Muslim comrade could remove his shoes, change his headgear, and roll out a mat to conduct religious prayers, turning off their radios so he would not be disturbed while doing so. And just remember that they have to do that five times a day. So you can just see the army patrol all stopping so that the one Muslim can do this. And of course, while he's doing this, the army patrol will probably get bombed by Muslim extremists. Another series of videos purporting to answer such questions as, can I be gay in the army? Do I have to be a superhero? And what if I get emotional in the army? Aimed at showcasing the army's inclusiveness and sensitivity to tearful recruits, crybabies, in other words. The advert is actually aimed at crybabies and bugger boys. These adverts were also criticised, with Colonel Richard Kemp lamenting that the army, like the rest of government, is being forced down a route of political correctness. I mean, honestly, what are they thinking of? Aiming an advert at crybabies and saying, oh, yeah, it's perfectly fine to break down in floods of tears when you're in the army. Don't worry, the homosexuals will put their arm around you and give you a hug and reassure you that everything is okay. The British Army is going to be the laughing stock of the world rather than being the best of the best, as it used to be. What is most important is that the army is full of soldiers. It is of secondary importance that they reflect the composition of society, added the Afghanistan veteran, a former commander of British forces in Helmand province. And that's the reason why that they give us, that they push this diversity, is so that whatever the organization is, it has the same percentage of non-whites in it as there are a percentage of them in the population. But why is that going to be helpful in the army? Why is that going to be helpful at all, to be honest? We hear these Negroes saying, we need to see ourselves represented everywhere. You need to see ourselves represented on the television. But why do they need to see themselves represented in the army? What possible use is it to have that? Surely Negroes would like to work with other Negroes and be with other Negroes rather than be with white people. And obviously white people are going to be able to get on better with other white people, people from a Christian culture rather than people from Islam, especially in the army. It's like if you have you've got a team there that are all supposed to be working in the same direction, all working on the same goals. And if you've got people there speaking different languages and from different cultures, they're hardly going to be working like a machine together. They're going to be crashing heads on what they should be doing. You're not going to have that sense of intuition because you're going to have people there with completely different customs to you. People that are going to be offended at some things and that are going to offend you at others. Like British people, we like to queue. There are plenty of other non-whites in the world that don't like to queue. They will just barge in. They don't have a custom of everybody queuing. It's whoever can barge their way to the front first gets there first. Now you imagine that happening in the army, and then you're told, well, you have to make compensation for their customs, which is what this advert is showing with everybody stopping so that the Muslim can roll out his mat. I mean, what that is saying is that the white people have to make concessions for the non-whites. So it means that the non-whites are calling the shots. So when the Muslim chef says, well, it's against my cultural sensitivities to use toilet paper, you just have to put up with that. And because you can't force him to change his culture, because these adverts are saying that the British Army will make concessions for Islam. It's ridiculous. And it's quite clearly costing the army an absolute fortune every year in claims from these people, as well as reducing its effectiveness. I'm sure the Russian army must be rolling in the aisles with laughter at the state of the British Army and those adverts that they put out this year. Well, let's have some positive news. We'll have some positive news to round the podcast off with today. And we've got some good news from Belgium here. Support for Belgium's two largest Flemish nationalist parties, who are both anti-mass migration, has exploded after the collapse of the government due to disagreements over the UN Migrant Pact. You may remember the Belgian Prime Minister, a horrible, horrible, horrible Jewish-looking, slimy creature who went over to Morocco and signed the UN Migration Pact, despite the fact that his government said that it needed to be debated in Parliament, despite the fact that a large part of the coalition said that there was no way that they would ever support this. And he just went over to Morocco and carried out treason against his people by signing Belgium into this agreement. So because of that, there was 5,000 yellow vests that turned up outside the EU Commission, where they were violently attacked by the police. And you can watch the footage of that at Red Ice. It is quite shocking to see these peaceful nationalists being attacked by the police, because it was right outside the EU Commission. And the Belgian government has now collapsed. It's completely fallen apart due to this UN migration pact. I just wish something to protest the fact that the British government has signed this pact would happen, because it seems to me that a lot of people in Britain are unaware of just how treasonous this is. They quite clearly understand it over there in Belgium. But why isn't there huge protests about this over here in Britain? I mean, this has brought the Belgian government down. Getting back to this article, when combined, the conservative New Flemish Alliance, the NVA, and the populist Vlaams Belang now account for a massive 42% of the vote in Flanders, according to a poll released by Belgian newspaper Het Nieuwsblad earlier this week, Le Soir reports. The poll was conducted just after the New Flemish Alliance resigned from the coalition government, following their vocal opposition to the country signing the controversial UN Migrant Pact in Marrakesh earlier this month. It was even signed in the city just not too far away from where these two white girls were just beheaded. Within weeks after all these traitor countries signing up to this UN Migration Pact, these would-be migrants beheaded two young white girls. I think it's very symbolic that that happened there in Morocco, where this signing of this pact took place. Shortly after the migrant pact, Belgian Prime Minister Charles Michel offered his resignation to Belgian King Philippe. While the NVA expanded their support, Vlaams Belang, the Flemish populist party that sits in the same European parliamentary group as Matteo Salvini's Lega and Marine Le Pen's Rassemblement National, doubled their support from 6 to 12%. So the nationalist parties have obviously got the Belgium population behind them, and the populist wave in Europe continues to rise. It's just going to rise and rise in 2019, I think, especially with the European elections that are taking place in May. I think we're going to see a sea change in that European Union government. I'm still waiting to see whether there'll be any changes due to Austria taking over the presidency of the EU. But once we start having a majority of populists in that EU government, we may see some changes. I know everything is just decided by the Commission and it's handed down, and the Euro MPs just have to sign it. But surely, if there are masses of nationalists that are in that European Union Parliament, they're going to be able to do something. They must be able to do something to jam up the works, which will be really entertaining to actually see, because of all these idiots that are protesting Britain leaving the EU and demanding that we have another referendum, or demanding that we stay in the EU. It would be very funny to see the EU going in the opposite direction, and while these clowns are still wanting to join them. I just hope that once Britain does leave the EU, we get some protection in on our borders, because apparently it's not just the European immigration that the EU promotes, but also when any of these brown refugees turn up in Britain, because of the EU's rules and because they have come from an EU country, we have to accept them. So we won't have to be doing that anymore, and we will be able to send them back. Whether they do actually send them back or not will be another issue entirely. But it does look like we may see a nationalist government in Belgium next, following on from nationalist government in Italy, nationalist government in Austria, and nationalist government in Hungary. Maybe even in France, if Macron is forced to resign, which looks like that may happen as well in the early stages of 2019. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. Have a very happy new year for tomorrow. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.